Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, November 16th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 20, hour and 25, hour and 30 minutes, however long it takes us here to get through all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for what I refer to as our Thursday meeting show. Two professional handicappers join us. The first, Mr. Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. The second, Mr. Rolf Michaels from wagertalk.com. We're going to talk college football, NFL, and college basketball here on today's show. Before we get into that, a couple of things I want to mention here. We've got some new listeners of the show now. I noticed we picked up some from the Locky Lockerson segment that we had on Tuesday. You can get full shows at bangthebook.com shortly thereafter with the time-stamped recap of the show, what we talked about, the segment lengths, all that type of stuff. You can also get full segments over at bangthebook.com that have been edited, done a little bit of audio work to them as well, so those are posted at the website. You can get the full show on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com/bangthebook, and then you can get the individual segments on our Spreaker page as well. So if you're looking for ways to get Bang the Book Radio, there are no shortage of ways to do that. Like I said, the best place to go is over at bangthebook.com. And while you're there, check out all the other outstanding content that we have. Extensive game previews, power ratings articles, situational betting articles, golf, NASCAR, UFC, NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL, college basketball, college football. We've even got European soccer and basketball previews for you as well. So over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you sign up over at DSI using that promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet to check things out. If you decide to deposit over there, you'll get 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook and 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. At BetDSI, it's only a game until you bet it. Two guests coming your way here today. The first, Mr. Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. Bradley, how's it going today, brother?
It's going just wonderful on this fine Thursday morning here in beautiful Vegas. How about yourself?
It's going fine. I got to ask, do you even know that it's morning? I know you told me before the show that you were up working as late as I've ever heard anyone work. Do you even know what day it is, what time of day it is, anything like that?
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, get that feeling sometimes in Vegas where they have no idea what time it is because they've been in the casino so long. During football season, sometimes I have no idea what day it is, what time it is. It does get dark very early here now at like 4:30, which kind of stinks. But it's light out at like 6. But, yeah, I mean, just trying to finish the strong. It hasn't been an exceptional season, to say the least. But, It from time to time, if you got a little bit behind, you got to work through it. Look, it's not like they're going to delay the games for you on Saturday. I mean, you got a time crunch there, and it's not like you can add extra hours to the day. So yeah, it was a late night burning the midnight oil last night, to say the least. That can't be doing that on a nightly basis, I can tell you that much.
This is something that we can talk about after the season, because we're going to have a little bit more time to do that when we transition over to college basketball and the NBA with your segments. But I do want to touch on it here now. One of the things I talked about yesterday with Brian Leonard, and one of the things I talk about with Wes Reynolds every week, is derivative betting, live betting, how that seems to be the future of the industry. Brad, it's got to be really challenging for you. You know, like you said, you have had a little bit of a difficult season, and a lot of people out there have. You're not alone in that boat by any means. But your personal handicapping, your personal bankroll, you know, you make some futures bets and you've got some hedging opportunities and things like that. You play first halves, you play second halves, you play derivatives, you do live in-game betting. These are all things that cannot be put, you know, on your results page as a premium pick seller, because those things just aren't tracked by these sites. So I got to ask you, how frustrating is that for you, where from a full game standpoint, you have struggled, but maybe some of your live plays have come in?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you asked the question, because in that regard only, it's probably been one of my – and I've been in the industry going back to the Phil Steele days now almost a decade, and this has been my most frustrating year because of the derivative, the future betting, you know, getting early week lines down at the Win each and every Sunday, being down there. Yeah, I've had a winning season. Personal bankroll's never been better. So to have a losing season of handicapping on the flip side of things is really tough. And you know, sometimes, and it's not going to happen here anytime in the next couple of years, but, you know, in the future, maybe 5-7 years down the road, maybe it's, you know, time for, You know, and hopefully something like, you know, a software comes up where you can track all that stuff and it can go into the record. But if that's not the case, you know, I think a lot of handicappers are going to have to ask themselves, do you want to, you know, keep putting out, you know, mediocre records? And look, you can have great seasons. There's no question about it. But or do you just want to go ahead because there's so many betting opportunities to be had out there? You know, maybe you slide into becoming more of a better than handicapper. I know I've struggled a little bit with it this year, but there is value to be had. The problem is not a lot of people can grab that value. I mean, I'll go to the off season and use the example. I mean, betting Notre Dame -6 against Temple, getting that, betting season win totals on, you know, Sun Belt teams over at the South Point of Memorial Day weekend. And after you bet them, you know, the Chris Andrews that does the smart thing and moves the teams a half a win. And we know a half a win matters a heck of a lot when you tend to think the market's pretty sharp. So it's something I'm going to have to ask myself here and decide, and not necessarily this off season, but I would say in future years, and decide, hey, do I want to be more of a better or more of a handicapper? Because they are two entirely different things.
And another thing I think, too, and we're not making excuses for anybody out there that's having a bad season for their clients. It's just that there are a lot of things about this industry that do make it very challenging to be a pick seller. And one of them that I think has to be really hard that I've really noticed this year is that the amount of game day moves and the significance of them has just been staggering in both college football and the NFL this year. And I don't know if it's related to injury reports. I don't know if it's related to, you know, just more people out there that are able to bet the max limits on these games. But if you're releasing, let's say you're releasing college football plays on Thursday, on Saturday, that line may be nowhere close to where you had it. And I think it's been kind of tough to forecast some of those game day line moves here this season as well. So that's another challenge. You want to give your clients lead time. You want to give your clients the ability to get in on these numbers. But then these heavy game day moves, I mean, some of them I don't get. Some of them I totally understand. Some of them you could have predicted, some of them you can't. And, of course, injury situations and final determinations on players dictate some of these lines as well. It just seems like, you know, more so this year than any other year, it's just been a greater challenge to be somebody that likes to play middle of the week, you know, before all the significant action starts to happen.
Yeah, and let me first say there are no excuses for me to have a losing season. Whether, you know, I could talk about how it's easier to take advantage of some stuff as a better, but as a handicapper, putting in the time that I do in the off season, putting in the time that I do in the in season, for my clients, there's no excuses. I need to be better. So I just want to put that out there. And I have never been a guy that's been about excuses. I think that's for losers. So, but as far as what you're saying, absolutely. I mean, I would love to regrade some of my picks, you know, after the fact, as far as after the line had moved. I mean, sometimes the battle that you have as a pick seller is, when do you release? Do you release early in the week, you know, knowing that you probably more often than not have great value, but also knowing that most of your clients aren't going to be able to take advantage of the lines? Or are you releasing late in the week when you know a majority of your customers are probably still betting late? That's just the reality of the situation still to this day in 2017, still relying on maybe just one out and can't bet until game day when you know sometimes those are the sharpest lines. But like you mentioned, as far as the line moves, I mean, I couldn't tell. There's been a lot of games where obviously the major line moves have been wrong this year. And, man, I would love to have had, you know, Ohio State. Let's use the Ohio State-Iowa game as an example. 17, I thought, was a great number. Wouldn't have been a part of that game whatsoever at 17. Didn't release anything. But, man, the late game day line move had Ohio State favored by 21 in that one. So it moved 4 points. And, man, if you're giving me Iowa plus 21 in that game at the start of the week, then, yeah, hey, let's ring it up, put it on the board. So you're exactly right. There's been some weird, funny line moves. Now, some, a lot of them have gone with me, and I'm breaking it down for a lot of my clients. Hey, you know, it's been a losing season, but, you know, on average, we're pretty much getting a half point to a point better than the closing number, and that usually, more often than not, should translate into wins. But there's also been some significant line moves against me that I just haven't grasped and haven't understood in the marketplace this year, unlike past years.
Well, we'll have to see how things play out here over the last few weeks of the season. Of course, bowl season, a completely different animal. We'll talk about that here in a couple of weeks' time where, you know, it's just so much different of a handicap. You see periods of line action, and then you see a lot of downtime where the numbers just sit out there stale. So at least we've got that to look forward to, because I think that's my favorite time of the year in college football from a betting standpoint. All right, let's talk about some of these games here. We got a couple of listener requests, and we'll start with those, and then we'll run down the other games by rotation order. But we'll start with this Georgia Tech-Duke game, game 327-328 on the board. And, you know, I know you really like Duke against Army, and Duke just didn't play well in that game. And really, Duke hasn't played well for a long period of time now at this point. They've lost some close games. But, you know, those are games that David Cutcliffe generally tends to win with his team. Back-to-back option games here, taking on Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech needs a win to get to a bowl. I don't know if they get it against Georgia next week in the rivalry game, so this is a big game for them. Duke needs two wins to get to a bowl, so they have no margin for error. But this number's gone up from 5.5 to 6. Pinnacle's at 6.5. So is Matchbook. So it looks like the sharp side here, a little bit of, on the Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, going back to last week's game, and yeah, Duke was one of my favorite plays of the week. Obviously lost outright. I don't think they played that bad. Yeah, it looked bad on the scoreboard, but, I mean, they held Army to season low in rushing yards, yards per carry, so the defense did the job. I mean, when you're sitting at halftime, it's 21-10 Army, and Duke has like a 14-8 first down edge. They have the yardage edge, block, punt, touchdown, you know, key play of the game there. Not saying I deserve to win when you're laying more than 3 on the road, and that line, you know, the market was with me, at least in that regard. Not saying I deserve to win, but, you know, there was a couple fluke plays there that when it goes against you in a relatively low total, you're just not going to get the job done. No, I'm not afraid. Here's the difference between, you know, maybe a Joe Public guy and maybe what I would say, quote unquote, I don't know how sharp I am this year, but I would say I'm more sharp than not. I'm not afraid to go back in on Duke here. I like what I saw defensively, them defending the option. You look at Georgia Tech, I think you're getting a little bit of line value because, I mean, they're probably the hottest ATS team in the country, 11-1-1 dating back to last year. You mentioned it, Duke's lost 6 straight games, so everyone's throwing them in the trash. You're going to have a lower scoring game. I mean, Duke games have went under the total 8 straight games. I'm going to lean with the home team here. Now, I get it, Georgia Tech's going to be pretty motivated in this one to get to that bowl eligibility. But I also think matchup-wise, Duke will be able to slow them down and has slowed them down in each of the last 3 times that these two teams have played.
So what's your plan of attack with this game? Like I said, it's up from 5.5 to 6 with extra juice at DSI, a couple 6.5s out there. 5 dimes already gone to 7, but it's minus 125 on Duke. Are you going to sit and wait this one out? Do you think we catch 7 flat or maybe at least a 6.5 flat across the market?
Yeah, I think we do. You know, looking at the betting splits, looks like 70% of the public tickets on Georgia Tech. Again, I think people want to buy Georgia Tech off that outright upset over Virginia Tech. They want to sell Duke 6 straight losses. I think you'll definitely get 6.5. Again, 7 flats out there in some places. I'll be on the take here. Will it be a premium pick on my card? I'm not sure if I can necessarily trust Duke. And again, I do think Georgia Tech's motivated here. If it was a clear flat spot, and looking at the schedule in the preseason, definitely looked like a flat spot off of Virginia Tech, and with Georgia on deck traveling on the road, I just think with that bowl need there, and that's a factor you got to consider in handicapping this year, you know, how motivated a team is. Is the bowl thing off of the table for them, or is it fully on and they got to win? Sometimes there's a little bit of extra pressure in that regard. But, yeah, I'll be on the take. I would wait it out, though, if you're looking to bet Duke. I think you'll get a clear 6.5 and probably even some 7s, especially at some square books. If you're listening locally in Vegas, your stations and whatnot, I think you'll get some 7s on game day.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think it's a good way to look at it. And, you know, I got to say, something that we've talked about a lot here on our segments together is sort of regrading the wins that teams have. And yeah, for Georgia Tech to get the outright upset over Virginia Tech, there's a certain level of impressiveness to it. But also here, Virginia Tech, I mean, they got handled by Miami, lost to Clemson, which isn't a big surprise, gave up nearly 600 yards against West Virginia. I just feel like Virginia Tech's not that good of a team. So I'm not sure how impressive that win actually is last week, but I do think it has inflated the line a little bit this week.
Yeah, I'm glad look, you're as sharp as they come, and I love doing this show each and every week. And that's a great point that maybe people aren't understand. And sometimes I think my newsletter guys get a little frustrated because I get a little bit later on the updates later in the season. But what I got to do almost each and every week, now I can't do it. The time just doesn't allot it for all 130 teams, but I grab 30 to 40 teams each week and go back through their season and regrade everything. And you know, over a 3-4 week period, you know, I go through one round and I go through at least a couple rounds on each and every team throughout the course of the season. You're exactly right. Virginia Tech, that I thought, you know, prior to the Miami game a few weeks ago, was maybe a legitimate top 15 team. You got to go back through and start regrading a lot of their wins and losses. And the reality is that this might not even be a top 25 team. And that's one thing that you got to do, and especially if you don't have advanced formulas. I get it, the Jeff Sagarins and some of the other guys out there, you know, you just type in everything gets automatic. For a guy still like myself, it's still, you know, nose to the grind, still got to do it manually and regrade some of these wins and losses. And that's what I do for probably 30 to 40 teams each and every week, go back and regrade every single game they played so far. And when you get to week 12, week 13, obviously that's a lot more of a time-consuming process than week 6 and week 7.
All right, another game that we had a listener request on here, game 419, 420, almost all the way down the board. Cal takes on Stanford. Stanford down to a 15.5-point favorite here. This thing blew through the pseudo-key number of 17, down from 17.5. The market, like I said, 15.5, 16 out there, DSI and Bookmaker at 16, Bet Online, Pinnacle, Five Dimes, 15.5. So not really picking up too much information based on which books have which lines. But the numbers, guys, early in the week did grab Cal north of 17. Do you have any thoughts on this game, Brad?
Yeah, Cal's a premium pick for me. I like the spot here for Cal. They're coming off a bye. They need to win to get to a bowl. They catch Stanford off the big win against Washington last week. Notre Dame's on deck. Now, I will say this. Stanford needs to win this game and needs Washington to beat Washington State next week to get to the Pac-12 title game. So it's not like – and look, it's their rival. So it's not like they're going to be totally flat in this respect. But they might be a little bit less than 100% healthy off back-to-back, you know, close physical games against Washington State and Washington. Here's where I also think there's some value on Cal, not just the situational spot, but I think they're built better to handle Stanford this year. They haven't been the last 5 years. I mean, they've lost 5 straight, failed to cover 5 straight, gotten blown out. I just think this year's team, much improved on the defensive side of the ball, allowing 14 points per game less, 86 yards per game less than last year. But I also think they're more balanced on offense, at least from a run-pass split, where, you know, and it's not Jared Goff three and out, and they put the Stanford, you know, rush offense right back on the field and they just run down and really wear out a California defense. I think with this new coaching staff, they'll be hyper-motivated for this game, especially the ability to get to a bowl when their season win total was, what, 3, 3.5? So I like the spot here for Cal, big rivalry game, and, you know, the customers of mine better get used to it the last 2-3 weeks. They're going to be a lot more dogs than favorites this time of year, especially bigger dogs in these – motivated bigger underdogs in these rivalry games.
There are a few points I want to bring up about this game, and I'm glad that our listeners actually want to hear about this one. Cal, as you mentioned with Justin Wilcox, a vastly improved team. And also, too, when you get that bye week late in the year, if you're 2-7 or 2-8 or something like that, you don't really care about the bye week. It doesn't mean anything to you. When you're 5-5 and you've got a shot to knock off Stanford or UCLA to get to a bowl game, you can believe that this team is fully focused during that bye week. Not to mention with a coaching upgrade, a bye week means a little bit more. And this has been a pretty good Cal team. I mean, you know, lost close to Arizona and Khalil Tate's got all this hype and the Wildcats are going in the right direction. Bad spot on the road in Boulder the following week, so I can give them a little bit of a pass for that one. But overall, when you look at Cal's body of work, very, very impressive. You've got Bryce Love, who's still not fully healthy for Stanford. I agree with you on Cal. I think that's a strong way to look here. Now, I'll ask you this. This sort of cycles back to the talking points we had earlier on in the show. At what number did you release Cal? And at this point, are you just giving a range of, you know, hey, I'd play Cal down to 14.5. I'd play Cal to 14. Because it feels like now you have to do that with the game day line moves that we're seeing.
Oh, absolutely. Kicking myself, 17 was there at the win. And, you know, the gentleman that, and I'm going to poke a little bit at him, and it's up to me. I'm a grown man. I should have made the decision. But he was with me down at the win on Sunday, Mr. Ralph Michaels, and I asked him about Cal. I got it circled on my page, and man, I what I do at the win is more pick off half points, and I know it would have been a bet at 17.5. It just wasn't there, but I still should have bet it at 17. Released it at 16. Yeah, even one thing I do for my customers, if you get my weekly newsletter, all premium picks, I show my actual betting tickets and put them right there in the newsletter. No other newsletter does that. So I did bet them at 16. I think they're good to go down to 14.5. I'm glad you brought that up. 14 downgrade. Still would lean with them at plus 14, but not, you know, certainly not, you know, a top premium type of pick of the week at 14. So that's one thing. Another one of your guests does a great job of, and that's Cheetah. You know, when he gives out his picks, he basically breaks it down, you know, what unit size, at what particular number. I think he does that just about as good as any other handicapper out there. But yeah, it's a play for me. Down to 14.5, 14, it starts becoming a strong lean instead of a strong premium pick.
All right, let's hit on a few other games here, and we'll actually go way back on the card and go to Friday night game, 317-318. Middle Tennessee State takes on Western Kentucky. Middle Tennessee State getting Brent Stock still back, which is a massive up for this team, not just offensively, but defensively as well, because back up with a ton of picks, put this defense into some very, very bad spots. Middle Tennessee, two shots to get the bowl eligibility. They're in Bowling Green this week. They host Old Dominion next week. Western Kentucky, same spot for them. They need a win to get to a bowl. Middle Tennessee at home this week at FIU next week. You surprised to see the Blue Raiders as a 3-point road favorite here, Brad?
Yeah, I am a little bit. You know, it looks like the market's really upgraded Middle Tennessee for this particular week. Thought I've had a handle on that Stockstill situation as far as a pure power rating, you know, up them 3-4 points. Then after the performances, up them more than, you know, I normally would for what they've done against UTEP. And the other team that they played so far. He was rusty in the first game, 13 out of 30, got a little bit better last week. Looks like the market's really upgraded him this week. You know, third game back for Stock still. You know, I probably upgraded him after last week a point. Looks like the market's upgraded him 3 or 4 points here. Now, Western Kentucky off a little bit of a phony final against Marshall. They're down 20, score a couple of touchdowns late. But, hey, that's, you know, with Mike White, I mean, a good quarterback, hasn't had obviously one of his better seasons in the first season. Under Mike Sanford Jr. there, but they're capable of a backdoor. Yeah, I would have put the line at pick 'em. Pure power rating, I think I'm a little bit down on Middle Tennessee and have been compared to the rest of the market. I know you were on the flip side. You were a little bit higher on Middle Tennessee than the rest of the market coming into the season. You know, pure power rating says West Kentucky should be favored. Handicapping line for me says pick 'em. I think there's slight value here on West Kentucky, but it seems to me like a little bit of a high variance game. I mean, if the light bulb really goes on for Stockstill and we get him, you know, 100%, and I'm not sure if he clearly is because he's gotten worn down each of the last 2 years. If he's 100%, then I would say the minus 3 spot would be the way to go. But current information for me says I'll be on the take here with the Hilltop.
I've got this one minus 1.5 for Middle Tennessee State, so we're kind of cutting the difference there between you and I. And one of the things I think that needs to be pointed out here is, yeah, Brent Stockstill's back, and that's awesome. And from a ceiling standpoint, Middle Tennessee's ceiling is much higher with him, and that's why you get that respect from a power rating standpoint. But they played UTEP and Charlotte, who are two of the, four or five worst teams in FBS this year. So now they go and take on a Western Kentucky team that's obviously down quite a bit without Jeff Brohm, but in the last 3 weeks, they played FAU, who's obviously very, very good in the Conference USA frontrunner, Vanderbilt, who's down, but they're still an SEC school, and Marshall last week. And like you said, you know, Marshall, a team that's got a great defense, a team that's played very well this year for Doc Holliday. So feels like there's maybe a little bit of recency bias here in this number. That's not to say I'm going to play Western Kentucky, but I think that's a really good game to illustrate what you have to do here at this time of the year, because your power ratings don't have as much importance as we talked about last week. You have to factor in some more of those situational and technical handicapping elements, and this game is kind of a poster child for that.
Yeah, and look, and motivation I don't think is a question here. Both teams want to get to a bowl, want that extra practices, and both at least want to salvage a little bit, because it's been a disappointing season for one Middle Tennessee. The injuries playing a big factor, not only Stockstill, but also Richie James. And just a very disappointing first season for Sanford. So a bowl bid for either one of these teams is big. So I think you do have some maximum motivation in that regard. And I agree with you. And the market looks like they really upgraded Middle Tennessee. I haven't seen the complete buy sign. I mean, yeah, they beat UTEP 30-3. Who doesn't? I mean, they're a bottom five team. You're exactly right. Charlotte's a bottom five team. And that one fell right around the number. With them being favored by 14 or 15, they won the game by 14. So, again, the market really upgraded Middle Tennessee, and I had the initial 3-4 points of upgrade for Stockstill but you know, I haven't. It's not like I went above and went another 3-4 points in the last two games. Just don't see it here. And you know, again, I lean on the take, but again, it's not. Even though there might be a 3 point or so difference between my power ratings line in this game, this is one where, you know, I'm not necessarily sure I got 100% confidence in that power rating. Maybe someone there in the market is just, you know, seeing something, and stock still is going to be 100% healthy. If that's the case, I'm going to lose that power ratings difference on this particular game.
Last thing I'll ask you about here with this game, and there are games where this is going to play more of a factor, but it is just an interesting angle to consider for this one. So Mike White, you know, transferred into this program. He's been very, very good, had a lot of success under Jeff Brohm, and really he's this entire team's offense. They cannot run the football at Western Kentucky. This is a team that I will downgrade quite a bit going into next year, but he's a senior, and it's senior day there in Bowling Green. I know that that's generally more of a factor when it comes to college basketball, but is that any kind of consideration for you in college football?
No, not like it probably used to be. I'll use an example. I mean, Louisville's 0-9 against the spread their last 9 final home games. I don't know if it necessarily gets factored in. I think it's a case-by-case basis, and I'm glad you bring up a guy like Mike White. I mean, he's been, you know, basically the best player in the program the last couple of years. But sometimes I prefer the guys that have been, you know, 4-year type of players, you know, that they try to really go out for, or if it's a senior class that's really changed, you know, the program. Maybe they were a losing program, and now in the last couple of years they've become a winning program. Maybe I value that senior class that's really played a big part more often than not. But is it something that I'm looking at in each individual handicap? Hey, final home game, they're really going to bring it. No, that's just not part of my arsenal. To me, it would have to be an outlier case where, again, maybe it's a very senior-dominated team with, you know, 15, 16 senior starters. And to me, then it's maybe a little bit more important. But, you know, let's also say, hey, it can be a negative. We've seen these, you know, pregame ceremonies with the seniors, and they get emotional. Their parents are on the field. They're crying. And I'll be honest with you, football is a very unforgiving sport. And if you're emotional and maybe aren't all there, you know, sometimes the kickoff, when you get, you know, you get hit under the chin strap, that'll wake you up a little bit. And well, I'll use an example because I really followed them. You know, obviously as a child, it was a negative for senior day at Notre Dame under Lou Holtz. They were very emotional, and they just would put one of their worst efforts of the season on senior day consistently. So sometimes it can be a positive, also it can be a negative. It's just not something I track on every single program. I got enough to track as it is.
All right, let's go to game 361, 362 here. We'll head out to the Big 12. TCU takes on Texas Tech. All the sixes that were out there early in the week are long gone. 6.5 with extra juice at DSI, BetOnline, and Bookmaker. A lot of other places have already leaped to the 7 here with the Red Raiders as a home dog in Lubbock. And this is a fascinating game for a lot of different reasons. Texas Tech, you know, they need a win to go to a bowl game. They've got this one in Texas on deck on the road in Austin. So it looks like Texas Tech prefer to get this one if they can, sort of remove all doubt there. TCU needs to keep winning games, needs to find a way to get into that Big 12 championship game. They're coming off of a pretty disappointing loss to Oklahoma. So there's a lot to unpack here with this game. And it's an early kickoff.
Yeah, and you got, you know, a bunch of injuries on TCU's side. I mean, the quarterback, Hill's questionable. Running back Anderson's out for the season. Their leading tackler's questionable for this one. So it's a pretty banged-up TCU team. On the flip side, Texas Tech's probably off one of the phoniest wins of the entire season. They're out first down 31-18, out gained by 150 yards. They're plus 3 turnovers. They get a 92-yard kick return touchdown, 31-yard fumble return touchdown last week against Baylor. For, you know, stop Baylor on the 1-yard line on 4th and goal. And the other factor for me is, you know, do they really like their coach of Kingsbury? Haven't played like it always during his era, but I got to think they got to win one of their final two games for him to definitely be back there in Lubbock next year as they get to a bowl here. A lot of a variety of different factors in play for this particular grab the game that necessarily has the great value, but there's a lot of times you grab the, you know, the particular handicap that has so many factors and has a lot of high variance. You know, I would love to play against Texas Tech off such a phony final, TCU coming off a loss, but the injuries for me until they clear up, and I know Kenny Hill's 100%, and I know, you know, what the game plan is for, you know, to replace Anderson, the running back, and I know the status of their, you know, one of their best players on defense. To me, I'm right at the number here. I got TCU 7, and that's where I'm going to stand pat. If it's 6.5, I'd be more inclined to lay it. Obviously, if it's 7.5, I'll be on the take here with Texas Tech. It's one to look at. If you start seeing the sharper books like, you know, Pinnacle starting to move one way on game day, maybe it's some late information, maybe Hill is out or he's more doubtful than questionable. And this is one where you watch the line throughout the, you know, the next couple of days here, and wherever it starts moving, I think that might be the correct way to go in this game. And this is, I hate to be a steam chaser, but that might be the right way to go here, because you know, let's face it, not everyone can have inside information on every single program, and any type of line movement to me in this particular game would say that that'll end up being the right side.
One more game I want to hit on with you here in college, and we'll spend a couple of minutes on the NFL. We'll go down to game 375-376. Virginia takes on Miami. Miami up from a 17-point favorite to a 19-point favorite here, coming off of their most impressive win of the season. Sorry it came at the expense of your Notre Dame Fighting Irish, but you know, Miami, there were a lot of questions about Miami. They had that close, almost walk-off win against Florida State, had to do the same thing against Georgia Tech, struggled at home with Syracuse, looked awful, and very easily could have lost on the road in Chapel Hill against North Carolina. Then the last 2 weeks, dominant performances over Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. Now, this seems like a really tricky spot to me, because you've got a road trip to Pitt on deck on a short week. You've got a Virginia team that's been pretty competent here this year. Well, they haven't played well 3 of the last 4 weeks. Is this number just too high?
It is. And you know, this is another premium pick for me. I did release Virginia in this week's newsletter. You know, the line actually got up to 20 in some spots, and there's been some buyback here in the last 24 hours on Virginia with it coming off of 20 down to 19. Still like it even in 19. You're exactly right. I think it's a tough spot for Miami. Look, I was saying Miami 2 weeks ago was overrated because of all their close wins. I've upgraded them a full touchdown here in the last 2 weeks. It's clear to me that they play the level of their competition. You know, they're fired up there at home. You know, the home crowd's the best that they've ever had at Hard Rock Stadium. You got to go back probably 2+ decades, or at least 17, 18 years back to when they played in the Orange Bowl to find better atmospheres for a couple of Miami home games. But how good is the atmosphere going to be? Noon kickoff, you know, against a team that you're favored by 20 off two big home games. You know, it's a late arriving crowd there, you know, South Beach, you know, maybe partying a little bit the night before. I'll make a prediction. I bet the stands are half empty by the time kickoff arrives, and maybe they fill up throughout the course of the game. You know, Miami, you know, look, they're in the playoff right now as far as the top four. They already have clinched the division. They're off two big performances. Yeah, I think it's a flat spot for them, and I think Virginia is perfectly capable. And I don't think they're going to be overly intimidated. I mean, this is the team that handed Boise State their worst home loss in 2+ decades earlier this year, so I don't think they're overly intimidated. I can excuse their loss to Louisville last week, the fact that they had just clinched bowl eligibility. They haven't been to a bowl last 5-6 years, so maybe they were a little bit down last week. I think they're motivated here. I think the back door is left wide open. And Miami's a team a little bit short on depth. They've lost a couple of key players, and I think Mark Richt will have the attitude, get the win, get in and get out, and let's move on to next week and really make sure my team's healthy for that Clemson ACC championship game in a few weeks. So, yeah, Virginia, to me, for all those reasons, are why they're a premium pick plus the points.
I've got this one right on 19, so I've got it there right by the number. But the thing is, you know, like I said, your power ratings do diminish in importance here at this time of the year. And one of the things that I'm looking at when it comes to this game is that you've got that Virginia 3-3-5 with Bronco Mendenhall. It's not an easy defense to dissect. How much time is Miami going to spend on beating that defense? How worried are they about beating that Virginia defense? I don't know. And then you also have a senior quarterback in Kurt Benkert here for Virginia. Didn't play all that well last week. Figure he wants to bounce back a little bit here this week because he's only got two more shots to get somebody to look at him to maybe be a practice squad type of guy or something like that, an undrafted free agent type. So, you know, I think that type of setup sets up well for a team like Virginia to go out there and cover a number like this, you know, especially against an opponent that, as you talked about, probably won't be all that invested. All right, let's touch on the NFL here for a couple of minutes, and we're going to start with the Bills-Chargers game, and this is a tough one to look at because you got Nathan Peterman taking over for Buffalo. You've got a concussed Phillip Rivers whose status is still up in the air a little bit for the Chargers. But the Chargers are taking on money here in this spot, or is that just an adjustment going from Tyrod Taylor to Nathan Peterman from a power rating standpoint?
Oh, I think it's definitely. I mean, it looks like that's a 3-4 point type of a move there. Look, Peterman. I think the future is actually decent for him. I liked him at Pitt and thought he would translate well to the pro leagues, at least as a capable backup. So, and look, Tyrod Taylor to me is overrated. He's not one of my favorite quarterbacks in the NFL, but it looks like the markets are a little bit higher on Taylor and a little bit lower than Peterman than me. So I agree with you. I'm a little bit surprised at how big the line move is here. It's another one to pay attention because obviously if Phillip Rivers is not going, they're not favored by 4.5 here. I can tell you that much is for sure. So tough for both teams because can you really trust both teams? I think there's too much, at least at this point, a little too much variance here. You got the Bills coming off of, a 47-10 loss in New Orleans last week. They're outgained by nearly 300 yards, and they had to score a late touchdown just to make it to 10 points. Chargers, I mean, to me, the game plan's simple. I mean, if the line's anything over 3, take the dog. I mean, they consistently, I don't care who the head coach is now, they play these games right. You know, it's a difference of 3. You had another one last week where they lost by 3 in overtime to Jacksonville, even though they're leading the game outright most of it. Did have the Chargers on that one. I think a factor that I can't believe more people haven't, it should be in almost every game write-up as far as the handicap. I mean, the Chargers head coach Lynn was the offense coordinator at Buffalo last year, so he does have a little bit of an inside scoop on the player personnel there at the Bills. So current 4.5, I guess I'll lay it right now with the 4.5 with the Chargers. But I'll be honest, guys, that's a forced lean at this point, and I'll wait and see with the clarification. And that, to me, the 4.5, obviously, is the anticipation that Phillip Rivers is going to play.
I know these guys are all professionals, but you have to think that people sitting around that Bills locker room are going, what the hell are we doing? Like, we're in contention to make the playoffs for the first time in a very, very long time. We're right there in the wild card hunt. We're not going to track down New England because nobody is. But, we're right there in the wild card hunt. Everything's going not great, but everything's going serviceably well. And then they go from Tyrod Taylor to Nathan Peterman. And it's like, I have to think that, these guys can probably get over it and they'll do whatever they can to help Peterman succeed. But I have to wonder about the morale of that locker room, sort of looking around going, why are we doing this? And why are we doing this now? And that's something that concerns me with Buffalo making a long trip out there. Now the Chargers have no home field advantage to speak of whatsoever, but it is still a long trip, late kick. And then this quarterback situation, I'd find it really hard to be on Buffalo unless obviously Phillip Rivers can't play. And this number is still a rogue 4 for some reason.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. I mean, look, a very similar franchise to the Browns. It's that Chicken Little, sky is falling type of mentality. When you haven't been in the playoffs for, 17 years, you're sitting there 5-2. You think you're sitting pretty. A couple things go against you. And look, one loss comes, turns into 2 turns into 3, and you're right back to where you've been as a franchise the last 17 years. When you don't have that winning culture, and Buffalo just hasn't had it here since the Jim Kelly, Marv Levy days in the 90s, great Buffalo teams, it can really turn against you. And we've seen at least the last couple of weeks they lose the mediocre Jets team. They get blown out against the Saints. And I'll say this, I think they're a little bit overrated to begin with at 5-2. I mean, they were at that point number 1 in the NFL in turnover margin. They were, I think, like plus 14 at that particular time. Last couple of weeks, turnovers haven't gone their way, especially against the Jets when they were minus 3. So I thought they were overrated at 5-2 to begin with. And this whole, surrounding culture around it, a couple of things go wrong. This one, to me, unless they turn around here and get a win here, I can make a prediction that I'll probably be against the Jets are against the Bills more often than I'll be on them here as we close out the season. I'll be looking to play against them on a game-by-game basis for the most part.
One more game I want to touch on with you here, Brad. Game 471-472 on the board. New England takes on Oakland. New England favored by pretty much a touchdown across the market. Varying levels of juice. Looks like there's a 6.5 out there still at BetOnline and one at Heritage. Really, really unique game here. You've got New England and Oakland playing in Mexico City. Now, for those that don't know, Mexico City is like 2,000 feet higher above sea level than Denver. So this is very unique, very extreme altitude for these players. New England played in Denver last week. They're training in high altitude this week before they go down to Mexico City. Oakland plays in Denver every year, obviously, and also played in Mexico City last year against Houston. So do all these altitude angles cancel out, Brad, and then you're just looking at a pure handicap for this game?
Yeah, I think they do, and I'm glad you brought that up because I know everyone's talking about it, but to me, it's a net negative. I mean, it's, you know, even on both sides, the fact New England stayed and been practicing at the Air Force Academy or at least around in Colorado Springs in the Denver area this week, and they played it last week. That's obviously a positive that you get your body gets used to it. Again, Oakland plays in Denver, like you said, played here and had some success at least in the fourth quarter last year in Mexico City as they beat the Texans. A horrible bad beat for the Texans. That's one of the worst ones of the NFL season for me last year. Won't forget that one. To me, comes down to the pure handicap. I kind of like the spot. Oakland, I mean, this is a now or never type of game for them, sitting at 4-5 on the season. They're coming off a bye. They've covered their last five times after a bye. I think they're going to have the slight crowd edge. Nothing like what they had last year where that was almost like a pure Oakland home game. I think New England will travel well, but I still think Oakland and that Raiders type of mentality and the whole silver and black, I think they'll embrace them again as a home team. Not sure that's getting factored into the marketplace. Maybe 1 point of home field advantage, just having the crowd edge. Yeah, I'll be on the take here. And look, you just don't survive as a handicapper in this industry fading Belichick and Brady. In fact, I mean, I think you'd be 44% in every single game dating back to after they won their first Super Bowl, you know, 16, 17 years ago. But, it's not going to be a premium pick for me, but I definitely have a lean on the Raiders here, especially getting that full seven. I just think it's a home run spot for them. It's their game of the year. If they get the win, then they can maybe make a playoff run and salvage the season a little bit here.
Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Tons of awesome insight here today, man. What do you got going on over at the website?
Yeah, we talk about it each and every week. It's my weekly newsletter. Instead of talking about the rest of the season, let's just talk about this week's issue. You can get it at the BradPowersSports.com store for $15, and you'll get a game write-up on every single game as far as college and pro. You get my exclusive power ratings. You get trends of the week. You get, you know, phony finals from the past week, computer projected lines for every single college football game. You name it, it's in there. It's $15 for the week. You get 8 premium picks in there, 5 college, 3 pro. And again, it's $15. It's called the Powers Picks newsletter. Go to BradPowersSports.com.
And you can follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Take care, my friend.
Good stuff there on today's show from Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com. One more guest to chat with here on today's show. That is the great Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. Thank you.
All right, well, we got college football, NFL, and college basketball to chat about here on today's show with you, Rolf. And before we get into that, I just want to ask you in a general sense here from a college football standpoint, you know, we got rivalry games coming up next weekend. We've got college football playoff considerations, of course, coming up for the next 2 weeks. Is this one of your favorite weeks of the year because you get a lot of situational advantages?
It is. Actually, it's one of my favorite times because we have multiple sports. I love being able to do college football and college basketball every day. You know, you have college football on every day with MAC action, great college hoops games as well. But when you're looking at college football, I do think there's great value. In some of these rivalry games, I downgrade my power ratings as much as 4 points in a fierce rivalry game. And, people overlooked that each and every year, but you know, don't be afraid to change those numbers. I mean, there's a lot to be said when these rivals meet, especially with something at stake. And even actually, that's a bad statement because these rivalry games matter when nothing's at stake except for the rivalry itself.
Now, what about this week? Because you got a lot of rivalry games here coming up next week, so you do have some look ahead types of spots to consider here. Is this a week where you're looking at a lot of those big dogs?
You know, not as a general rule. You know, I look at each game individually because some teams have a tendency to look ahead and some teams don't. So you just have to look at how long the coach has been there, what he's done in that situation, and transfer that forward to this year. Don't be afraid to look at history to see what should occur. There's a lot of teams, again, and a lot of coaches that do tend to look ahead. And there's some that don't. So I take each case individually and just handicap them separately based on the coach's history and the team history, and if the situation is similar to something that's occurred in the recent past.
All right, now there's two games I want to talk about specifically with you here in depth, and we're going to go way, way, way under the radar for this one. And this is kind of a selfish thing on my part, because this is a game that I've been looking at here a lot where my power ratings don't line up with the line that's out there. But I think situationally, one team has a really, really big advantage. That's game 401-402 in the Sun Belt between Coastal Carolina and Idaho. Idaho opened a 9-point favorite. There's a few eights out there, a couple 8.5s. Most of the market's sitting at 9 still. But this is a really, really interesting spot. Now, for Idaho, of course, we have to see if quarterback Matt Linehan can go. But for those that don't know, Idaho is going to the Big Sky. They're going to be an FCS team next year. So this is their last home game as an FBS team against Coastal Carolina. Rolf, what are you seeing about this game?
Well, that's the unfortunate thing, is not knowing the quarterback situation. And losing a quarterback late in the year is bad enough, but losing a quarterback that's been a four-year starter is 53 yards away from setting the all-time record in school history for passing yards, and has a 16-4 ratio is another thing. I did check the papers this morning prior to coming on just to see what the update was. And they were off a bye last week, and Paul Petrino, the head coach, said, we'll have to see to wait what happens. But I'll tell you what, I mean, with a quarterback like Linehan, if he says I can go and even make an effort, you know they're going to try to get him on the field. Now, that can actually hurt your team. You know, you're looking at an Idaho team that has had every Sun Belt game decided by one score and in the last minute. Their three Sun Belt losses are a total of 11 points. So for me, from the Idaho side, that says we have major distractions with Senior Day, last home game, quarterback trying to break records, not having margin in any conference game. But on the flip side, you have the Chanteliers. Now, you're new to a conference, so you have to study all these teams. You're new to traveling in the conference, so all these stadiums and venues are unique. And there's no more unique situation than the Kibbe Dome. Your sidelines are only, your end zones are just 11 yards. So right after that end zone, you have the walls, which makes it very, very, the perspective of passing, the perspective of running is different, the perspective of kicking is different. But you look at the Chanticleers, they have lost every game since their opener against UMass. And in those losses, all Sun Belt losses, the average score has been horrific. The average loss is by over 20 points per game. Interestingly, 2 weeks ago, they played Arkansas on the road and they only lost by one. But every other loss has been by eight or more in Sun Belt play. So, you know, I've gone back and forth in this game. Oh, yeah, and by the way, the Chanticleers are also playing a new quarterback. Their starter got hurt a couple weeks ago, Tyler Keene. They're playing Clinton Anderson. This is Anderson's first road start as a quarterback as well. So, there's a bunch of scenarios in there. While Coastal Carolina is an ugly team, with a quarterback making a start in one of the toughest venues, I just can't back Idaho as a significant favorite with everything going on in that role.
What's crazy about Coastal Carolina is that they were ahead with 2 minutes left in that game against Arkansas. Arkansas scored an 11-play, 76-yard touchdown drive with a minute 55 left to survive against Coastal Carolina. So, you know, that was obviously something that we didn't expect, especially with what you've seen from Coastal here throughout the Sun Belt schedule. But you know, this is what I love. I love getting a game like this where, again, it's so far under the radar. No one's talking about this game at all. You're not going to find this game on any other show that's out there in the industry. But, man, there are so many things on both sides. And it's not even just going to the Kibbe Dome and playing in this unfamiliar venue where you've got, like you said, the walls right there behind the end zone. That is one hell of a trip from Conway, South Carolina, all the way out to Idaho, a place these kids have never been. I guarantee the weather up there is already bad. So they're going to be dealing with that when they walk out of the hotel. And, you know, I know the game is inside at the Kibbe Dome, but still, it's still a shock to your system. You know, when you go from a warm weather, nice area like Conway up to Idaho. So, man, there's just so much about this game. And I'll ask you this here, Rolf, if it's announced that Linehan can play, where does this line go? I mean, is this line assuming that he can't play? Is this line assuming that he can play? What do you think?
Well, I think this is, you know, this is one of those games where they're going to put a line out, but I think it's right in the middle. I think it probably only goes 3 or 4 points down if it becomes official. I still think they stay a touchdown favorite if he's out. You know, their quarterback behind him, though, Mason Petrino, only threw 5 passes in his last game. He had a 2-0 ratio. They were coming back, you know, in that Troy game, and he played okay. But, you know, going back and forth in this game, you know, with so much uncertainty and so much uniqueness to the game, you know, I think it's a game where I'll go ahead and look at the total of under 52. You know, Coastal hasn't topped 21 in 5 of their last 6 games. You know, their offense isn't prolific. And Idaho, you know, we used to think they have a high-scoring offense. And, you know, their highest score of the year is 31 points they put up against ULM 2 weeks ago. You know, besides that, they had 21, 21, 20, 16. So talking it out with you, it's not a play I had in my mind. But with the uniqueness, the new quarterbacks, perhaps being a little conservative on the Linehan side, not wanting to get him hurt, conservative with a quarterback playing his first road start for the Chanteliers, I might take a look at the under 52 in this one.
And Idaho, if they win out, would be bowl eligible with 6 wins, but they have to win this game, then at New Mexico State, which is a tall task, and then at Georgia State as well. So it seems like they're a long shot to make a bowl, but that bowl carrot is still sitting out there. All right, let's go to a game that is much bigger, and a lot more people know this game. Game 413-414, Texas A&M takes on Ole Miss. And Ole Miss here, 2.5-point favorites in this game, and they've got the rivalry game on deck in the Egg Bowl against Mississippi State. But for Ole Miss, you know, you have this situation with an interim head coach who's not going to stick around. Texas A&M, who knows about the job security of Kevin Sumlin? So this is an interesting little spot here as well, in one of the few games with an SEC team actually playing somebody.
Well, you know, we have 2 SEC games, and let's see what they did last week. Oh, yeah, they played New Mexico and Louisiana. So each team put up a 50 spot against those non-conference foes in home games last week. But this is a situation where I clearly do have a lean in the game. You know, the Mississippi game against Louisiana was a game where ULL suspended multiple players before their game. And while they put up 50 points, it wasn't quite as easy as the A&M side. A&M led New Mexico 44-0 and basically had a half a week of a bye when you have that lead and you're pulling all your first and second string players. You know, I look at A&M and their body of work. Well, you know, in the last 4 conference games, they were played Auburn, Mississippi State. They were at Florida and played Alabama. Well, there's a lot of teams that are going to be 1-3 in that situation. You know, on the flip side, Mississippi's wins this year are only Kentucky, Vanderbilt, UT Martin, and South Alabama. They have, you know, when you're only beating Kentucky and Vanderbilt, although, you know, hats off to the Tennessee Vanderbilt team playing so well. But it's a game where A&M now has Kellen Mond back. Remember, Kellen Mond was named the starter against UCLA. He was injured in that game. And in the past 3 weeks, we've seen the offense progress as they used – I'm sorry, Starkel was the starter, got hurt against UCLA. Kellen Mond came in. And in the last 3 games, they used both Starkel and Mond, and the offense has become much better. And now I like it. Starkel may not start this week, but he's going to play the majority of time. You know, on the Mississippi side, I just don't see their defense being able to do anything. They've allowed 21 or more first downs in each of their last 8 games. They're allowing 516 yards in conference play. Jordan Tame, who is a guy who also took over for the injured Shea Patterson, and, you know, now he's playing and people have film on him. And I just see this as a situation. His first start was Arkansas a couple weeks ago. So his competition, start against Kentucky, start against Louisiana. Now he's playing against an A&M defense that can have sacks and really start to pressure him. So this is clearly a situation where quarterback situation for me clearly favors A&M. Body of work recently clearly favors A&M. One team has a defense, that's A&M. I am clearly on the A&M side this week.
Well, and I think another consideration here, too, and I talked about this earlier on in the week about trying to get into the heads of these players, into the heads of these teams. Ole Miss can't go to a bowl game. They have those sanctions from the Hugh Freeze era, and who knows what else happens to them going forward. But, you know, it seems to me like at this point, their season's about winning the rivalry game next week. I don't know how invested they are here in this game. Yeah, it's senior day and it's at home, and maybe they like Matt Luke. I don't know. But you know, I think this could be one of those spots, too, where you know, you kind of look at this game and you sort of ask yourself, how motivated is Ole Miss? Now, on the other hand, Ole Miss likes to put up offense, and they've done that a lot here this year and really over the last few years. So you also have a spot where a team like Ole Miss can go out there and say, hey, boys, let's just go put up as many points and pad our stats as much as we can. So I think it's kind of dangerous to handicap motivation here in a game like this as well.
Well, you know, my thought would be, you know, if I'm a head coach and I'm sitting at a 5-5 record, I think I can keep my kids motivated for this home game, even with Mississippi State on deck, because you're still playing for a winning record, and that is still your legacy. So, you know, I'm under the belief, at least, that if you have a shot to have a winning record, even if you can't make it to a bowl, I don't want to go into that final game being 5-6 with a potential for a losing season if the game's close. Now, you know, one counterpoint to your statement about them putting up a lot of points recently, I will say that in the last three games, you know, they have put up 37, 37, and 50 with Jordan Te'amo replacing Shea Patterson, but it was against the defenses of ULL, which is number 123, Kentucky, which is 75, and Arkansas, which is number 90. A&M comes in with not a great defense, but they are number 39 this year, a huge step up from what the young quarterback has seen in his first two starts.
All right, let's go over to the professionals here, and I think it's a really good point there to end on for the college football portion of our segment here. And let's talk Bengals and Broncos. We'll talk a couple of defenses that statistically overall have played well this year, but both of these defenses have been put into some very, very bad situations the last couple of weeks. For Denver, they're sustaining nothing on offense. Defense has been exposed as a result. Cincinnati, their opposition has had the ball for over 40 minutes in each of the last two games. So this Bengals defense has been on the field a ton. Denver's a 2.5-point home favorite, which, you know, given the mile high and the altitude factor, would maybe imply this game's about a pick'em on a neutral field. Maybe Cincinnati a slight favorite. Is this a game that you have any desire to play, Rolf?
I don't. I probably wouldn't even looked at it if you didn't send me a note and said we're going to talk about it. I guess what jumps out to me is this. If you have the Denver Broncos, and this is going backwards from their New England loss in their last five games, they lost their games by 25, 28, 10, 21, and 13 points. So every loss has been by double digits. The average loss probably somewhere around 16 points per game, and yet you're a favorite. That tells you the sorry state of the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, the Cincinnati Bengals offense in the last 4 weeks, they put up 308 yards last week. That was their high. Against Pittsburgh, they had 179. Against Indianapolis, 276, and Jacksonville, 148. Now, the NFL this year changed their scheduling quite a bit. They've scheduled many more teams. They've scheduled 11 opponents this year to play three straight road games. Earlier this year, I took a look at how those teams do, and they were 11-11 against the spread. But I can't think of a worse situation this year than the Bengals playing a third straight road game, a fourth road game in 5 weeks, and having to play in the altitude of Denver. So spot-wise, I clearly am on the Broncos in this, despite their offense not having done anything and their defense playing so poorly. Now, you got to remember, prior to the last 2 weeks, the Broncos had not allowed over 280 yards per game. So who did they face? They faced Philadelphia on the road and New England at home. They faced two of the best offenses in the NFL, and they got rolled for 92 points. Well, that's bad. But they still only gave up 419 yards and 396 yards those last 2 weeks. It's not as if, though, they were getting run up and down the field. They gave up some big plays, and they had some turnovers as well. So situationally, I'm going to expect Denver's defense to get much closer to their norm, which was under 300 yards per game. I have Cincinnati's offense, which is averaging 230 yards the last 4 weeks, playing a third straight road game in altitude with three straight home games coming on deck. While I couldn't believe I'd say I'm going to back the Denver Broncos, I certainly have a clear lean on them in this game.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, this is one of those games that you can look to handicap a little bit situationally, because you have two teams here that are accustomed to success, and neither one of them is having any success this year. Denver's going to miss the playoffs, and this is a team that just won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. Cincinnati, you know, had five straight playoff appearances, didn't win any of those playoff games, of course, but now they're staring down the barrel of a second straight year missing the playoffs. Marvin Lewis, I don't know how many more lives this cat has, but he should be running out of them at this point. So, you know, you start breaking this thing down, and you kind of look at it and you say, you know, maybe Denver does have a little bit more to play for in this spot, but the situational elements very, very strongly favor Denver. So I'm glad that that's the direction that you went with that game. One other NFL game I want to talk about here, Philadelphia takes on Dallas. This is the Sunday nighter. Philadelphia opened a 3.5-point favorite, came down to 3 at some places with some extra juice moving around. Now we're back up to 3.5 or 4, DSI, one of the books, sitting on 4 right now with Philadelphia. To me, Rolf, as I break this game down, there's only one way that I can go with it, and I'm curious to hear if it's the same way that you're looking.
Well, you know, this is one of those games where, you know, because of last week's results, Philadelphia putting up 50 on Denver and Dallas losing as bad as they have, we probably have over a 3-point line adjustment. You add in the Ezekiel Elliott suspension, and now it's finalized. We have a full touchdown change from 1 week to another. Normally that puts me on the team that is getting the value, which would be the Dallas Cowboys, but I just can't play them. You know, I think that there's two reasons. One is the Ezekiel Elliott suspension, and not just because he's out, because the offense plays so much different. But the second is Sean Lee, their middle linebacker, perhaps is one of the most valuable defensive players in all of the NFL. When he's on the field, Dallas Cowboys allow 80 yards per game rushing. When he's not on the field, they allow 160 yards per game rushing. This is one of those eye test games, and we talked about them before. You know, we talked about it with the Rams going to the Giants a few weeks ago. When one team looks so good in the NFL and one team looks so bad, they've been covering. They've been winning, and they've been covering. If they pass the eye test, they've been working. And Dallas just looks bad for one game. Number one, because of their left tackle was out and Ezekiel Elliott was out. Well, they gave up 8 sacks last week against Atlanta. Well, I'll tell you what, Philadelphia has had 4 more sacks in 4 games this year. And then you look at what changes with Ezekiel Elliott. You know, you and I both know from the Ohio State days, Ezekiel Elliott was a rare running back that knew how to block the blitz pickups. And very few running backs can do that. Even as a second-year running back, he does it better than most. It also takes the play action out of the game. What did Dak Prescott do last week without the play action? Well, he went 20 of 30 for 126 yards passing. They put up 233 total yards. And, you know, can Philly go on the road and win? Well, yeah, they've already gone to Washington and won. They went to the Chargers and won. They went to Carolina and won. And their only loss at Kansas City, they outgained Kansas City 406 to 344. They were minus 2 turnovers in that game. That is the only game this year Philadelphia has lost the turnover battle. And I just, when you have a solid road team with a solid defense, an excellent offense that doesn't turn the ball over, and a team without a left tackle, their best player on offense and their best player on defense, I'm hoping I'm agreeing with you that there's only one way to go, and that's the Eagles.
Yep. I completely agree with everything you said there. That is exactly the direction I'm looking to go. You know, Tyron Smith still not practicing. Sean Lee not practicing. Dez Bryant is hurt. He's got some lower body issues, an ankle and a knee. Factor in Elliott. And you know, I can speak to Elliott picking up the blitz, because – when I watched him at Ohio State, and obviously our listeners know I'm an Ohio State fan, he was the most complete running back I've ever seen Ohio State have because he was able to pick up the blitz so well. And, I mean, he's built like a brick shit house too. So if somebody's rushing at him, he stands that dude up. And he did that so many times for Ohio State. And that's something that they're definitely missing here. And the scary thing about Philadelphia is the pressure they can get with their front, just in their base defense. They don't even have to send anybody. So if they can sit back with a little bit of zone coverage with their linebackers and their secondary, I mean, where's Dak Prescott going to go with the football? How is Dallas going to soften up this defense? I just don't see any way they can do it. I think schematically, this is a game that sets up very, very bad for Dallas at this point. Maybe Philadelphia doesn't cover 3.5 or 4 on the road, but I think that they dominate in this game. So I think they win the stat battle. Maybe if something fluky happens, they may not cover. But, yeah, Philadelphia is the only way I can look to go in this game.
Yeah, again, the NFL, it has clearly worked. If the eye test looks that different, go with it this year. And that clearly fits into one of these games that we put in that category.
All right, well, let's talk some college basketball here. I know you love college basketball. We're going to do some more college basketball stuff with you each week here as we go throughout the season. And then, of course, once bowl season's over, we'll transition strictly over to the college basketball side with you here. excuse me, I still have that little bit of a cough that I had yesterday. But I want to touch on one specific game with you here tonight, and I want to walk through your handicapping process, how you start looking at a game, how you start evaluating the number, what stats, what information you're looking to use. And I think this non-conference game here tonight between Xavier and Wisconsin, game 5-15, 5-16, is a perfect one to do this. This number opened Wisconsin -1. It's up to Wisconsin -3.5 across the market. Xavier, a top 15 team. Wisconsin not ranked. Wisconsin not the team they were a couple of years ago under Bo Ryan. They've had a lot of roster turnover in that time. So walk us through what the process looks like for you here, Rolf, with a game like this.
Well, this is a game where, you know, we're talking now, it's November, we're a week into the season. So to me, it's imperative to start with what happened last year and know what teams are on the court. You know, we're going to look at Xavier. They were 24-14 last year. They finished my number 32 team, and they had an average score of 75-71. This year, they have a ninth-year head coach, Chris Mack. They have three returning starters, and I made my opening power rating at 92.3. They were my number 21 team in the country. Let's take a look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin was 27-10 last year. My number 17 team against the number 30 schedule with an average score, average win margin of 10 points per game, average score 72-62. A third-year head coach in Greg Gard, only one returning starter, and they come up as my number 34 team. So I have Xavier as more returning starters with the better team at this point. Let's take a look at what the teams did this year. Well, both have done as expected. Xavier hosted Rider and Morehead State and routed both of them. They scored 101 points in both games this year on a 26-point win and a 52-point win. Wisconsin hosted Yale, beat them easily by 28 points, and then hosted South Carolina State, beat them by 35 points. So both teams have done as expected, won and covered both games this year. You know, intangibles, well, we know that Xavier lost to Wisconsin a couple years ago in the tournament, and that to me is viable revenge. When you're within two seasons, you have the same head coaches, and you have some of the same players back, to me, viable revenge is that loss from that 66-63 game. Xavier did cover getting 4.5, but again, another check mark to Xavier for me. And then the biggest factor I look in is the balance of returning starters or any other transfers. No transfers that make a difference to me on these teams, but it is big to me that Trayvon Blewett came back to Xavier. When I have a team that could have lost a player to the NFL draft and he would have been drafted in a lottery round, which Blewett probably would have, and then he returns to his team, I count that as 1.5 starters back. And Blewett has played like a superstar already this year, 51 points in 50 minutes. So they have multiple go-to guys. They have the revenge situation. I have them as the better team coming in. Granted, the home court is gonna take away the difference between the two teams. But I do like Xavier in this one to go ahead and get the win. They've proven in the past they can win these type of road games and go into a Wisconsin setting. Granted, I don't look at the ratings at all this year. You know, when you say Wisconsin isn't rated and Xavier is, it pretty much is a crapshoot at the beginning of the year. People are looking at what other people have rankings. They look at the blue ribbons. They look at other people's power ratings. And you come up with your top 25 without knowing what happens on the court. But I do look at my power rating numbers where I had Xavier as a top 20 team. And I will back the Musketeers in this game. It won't be one of my top plays of the day. But it will be one of those certain things where you're going to have fun. The game's on TV and you want to put something on it. I clearly am a backer of them tonight.
Yeah, that's really what I brought up with the ranking is that, you know, and I talked about this a little bit on yesterday's show. You have a lot of people that are betting college basketball right now that don't really know too much about the 2017-18 versions of these teams. They know what they remember from the past. And to see Xavier ranked and not see Wisconsin ranked, a lot of people are going to look at it and say, well, I know Wisconsin's good. I know Wisconsin's been good for a while. I don't know. Maybe Xavier's ranked for reason X, Y, and Z, but I'm going to play Wisconsin anyway. That's not to say that that's where the line move is coming from necessarily. I think there are probably some numbers guys that are on the opposite side of you here in this one. But, you know, it is one of those very interesting games to take a look at early on in the year because it's also nice to get a game that actually means something at an on-campus site. So that's the next question I want to ask you about here, Rolf, is, what is the Kohl Center worth to you in a game like this? And does it change, you know, in terms of what the Kohl Center is worth in conference play?
Well, you know, it's sold out tonight and it'll be loud and, you know, being on national TV, they'll be in conference ready form. You know, when I'm doing college basketball, you bring that up, but I probably should go through and try to do venues. They change so much. They're not as steady as football, where football's pretty steady year in and year out. College basketball changes so many times during the season with the students there, with the students not there. This is a game where the students are there, and I could think it's worth at least 4 points to me, perhaps even 5 points in this setting, because I would say it's one of the top 15 or 20 home venues. You know, in football, I have them on the top of my head, and I couldn't go through them all, but it's you know, when you watch a game and the camera's shaking, you know you have a home court edge. Let's put it that way, the camera shaking method, and that's what you're going to get at Wisconsin tonight. But again, with a veteran team, with a veteran head coach, I think Xavier can withstand that.
All right, now, of course, the -1 was the overnight line on this game. So in terms of both your personal handicapping and when you release plays to clients, you know, college basketball, the numbers are just moving all day long. And, you know, obviously with college football, we have several days to sit there and look at them. You don't really get that luxury with college basketball. So when do you enter the market? When do you send out things to your clients?
Well, I do have a set time that I send out to my clients, which is noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. And I do that because at that point I can feel fairly confident that 90% of my customers that want to play the game at that time are going to get the same number that I'm giving out. It's sort of that dead period where, you know, the early lines have moved and you're not quite to game time where you get some of those late steam chasers moving lines as well. So it's a dead period where if you have access, you can get the line I'm giving out. And that's the tough thing situation about being a handicapper versus being a bettor. Obviously, you're playing those overnight lines when you're playing for yourself and, you know, or you're playing in the morning. But as a handicapper, you know, you don't want people to get cheated off lines. And when I've had my success in the past, I mean, you know, the plays were actually, this was back in the early 2000s when I had back-to-back number one titles in college basketball. I had a few consensus guys and groups following me that would move the line. So I wanted to be consistent and say, okay, the plays are going out at 3 p.m. Eastern. If you have the ability to play them at that time, that's when I want you to play them. I don't want you to wait one way or the other because I'm confident. And there's been some games that have moved against us had I waited longer. But, you know, you want to give – you want to make it comfortable for your – you want to make it comfortable and realistic for your customers. You can't give them a game 5 minutes before the game starts and expect all of your customers all across the country to be able to be at a phone or get their email at that exact minute and make that play. So I like doing it, giving my customers the ability to shop, giving them the ability to leisure at a point where I'm comfortable with the line and at a point where I'm comfortable the line's not going to move unless there's some breaking news in the next few minutes.
All right, so I know we talked about the personal numbers that you have, the power ratings that you have for these teams, and then factoring in some of the situations, home court advantage, all that type of stuff. What else are you looking for here early on in the season that you rely heavily on to make your plays?
Well, it's really just a lot of reading and information from the local writers and the schools. You know, I don't make a play without reading that local, both local newspapers for the day. I don't make a play without reading the game notes for each team. There's a lot of times when players are suspended for games to start the year. There are a lot of times that kids may not actually even be available to play until we get to December 1st or when the new semester starts a few after that. There's a lot of transfers that come in and have to sit out those first few games. So just because you see someone's returning starters, that doesn't mean that's the returning starters for today's games tonight. That's basically what they have for the majority of the season, and that's how I do it. Five returning starters means, you know, they have five players back that started last year. It doesn't mean they have five players back that are starting tonight's games, and that's the big difference. So you have to take each case individually. You have to look at how many of those starters are playing. You have to look at who else was injured. You have to look at how they've played. You know, there's some teams that are young teams that have really struggled against the zone, but not every team plays zone the full, the entire game. So, There's not one thing you have. You make your starting number. You know, I look at what they did last year. Even now, every game I do, I start the same process. What they did last year, are they an offensive or defensive team, and what that translates into this year. The key is that during the first 2 weeks, we see all the, let's say, 80 to 90% of the Power 5 teams are playing home games against weaker opponents. Everything switches right after Thanksgiving when these teams are making their first road starts. It is a kid in a candy store because you have so many situations to play against teams that are getting challenged for the first time. Xavier would be one of these situations. Xavier played two nobodies. They were a 25 and a 27-point favorite. But they're different to me because they're going on the road with over three starters, plus a superstar that can score. So they're not in that same category. You know, there's some teams coming up that have no returning starters back this year and going to be playing on the road for the first time. Those are the situations you look for to play against coming up here right after, you know, coming up in the next week or right after Thanksgiving.
All right, last thing I want to ask you out here for today's show, Rolf, is like I said, you know, you have a lot of people that are jumping into the college basketball pool just because it's there, because the water's warm and the games have just started. So they're largely betting based on teams that they know, teams that they remember, things of that sort. So if you've got listeners that are out there, you know, playing ESPN games just because they're on, playing Fox Sports 1 games just because they're on, CBS, if they start showing some college basketball here, are there any of those name brand, really well-known teams that you want to caution our listeners about that, you know, could experience significant drop-offs or have a lot of trouble here at the outset of the year?
Well, yeah, let's put up a situation for next Monday and let's look ahead of the game. You know, we have Pittsburgh under Jamie Dixon was a brand that, you know, was a solid top 20 team, never quite took the next step. Well, he left. So now we have Kevin Stallings in his second year at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh returns bare. All five starters departed. This year they lost to Navy in a game that was close to the wire. They lost at home to Montana, a game that was close to the wire. And now perhaps we're getting some value because they beat UC Santa Barbara last night, 70-62. That game went down to the wire. It was a 3 or 4 point game, and they made their free throw shots down the end to win by 8. They're going to play Penn State Monday at the Barclays Center, and team that returns 5 starters. This is my perfect situation. You have a team with no returning starters. While it's going to be a neutral venue, you know, I believe Penn State will have the home edge in New York City. You have 5 returning starters with Penn State. You have Pat Chamberlain, a veteran head coach. Penn State was my number 52 team coming in, so not quite elite because they haven't taken the next step. This is a game where I certainly have Penn State circled as a play. I expect them to be, you know, around 11-point favorite. Pittsburgh has the better history than Penn State. Penn State has been an up-and-comer the last few years and has had a tough home court. But if this game is anything under 2 touchdowns on Monday, I've got a 5 returning starter against a 0 returning starter in a game that'll be nationally televised. It should be, I believe, if it's in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. It's a game where I'm going to be on Penn State Monday night.
Are there any other teams that, you know, are household names that just aren't likely to live up to expectations this year?
Well, let me throw out a few that, you know, Kentucky returns no starters, but Kentucky and Duke are, you know, Kentucky in themselves is a different scenario. They have so many one and dones that, you know, they're bringing in basically the McDonald's All-American team and playing college basketball. So we've seen them struggle early. They had a couple close games this year, but they're not a team that I put into that list. Arkansas Little Rock is a team that's had some success in the past, but they're in the second year of Wes Flanagan's system, and they don't have any returning starters. But a couple teams that everyone's going to be familiar with have first-year head coaches and only one returning starter this year: Dayton, Virginia Commonwealth, NC Wilmington, and California. Rice, Akron, and Grambling also fall into those categories. So when you have those 7 teams that have a first-year head coach with only one returning starter, most of the time they're bringing in new systems. Most of the times they're trying to change both offensive and defensive schemes. They don't have a lot of continuity from last year. All of those teams will be play against teams for me until we get into at least mid-December or late December.
Yeah, and Akron's an interesting one because I was kind of following their game a little bit against Cleveland State last week. And Cleveland State, you know, without Gary Waters, that's a program that's kind of down a little bit. Cleveland State was up 8 at the break. Akron took over in the second half, won by 10 in the game, but Akron only shot 29.9% in that one. So Akron definitely looks like a team that may want to be on your fade radar here over the first few games of the season. But Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com, what's going on over there? I know you do a ton of excellent daily guides, weekly guides. Enlighten our listeners about some of that stuff that you have going on.
Well, you know, I just started a few days ago. We did it last year. It was the NBA stat sheet. And, you know, I look at the NBA and I spend some time in it, but I just haven't had the history and I don't have the love for the game to do it wholeheartedly. But I think the stat sheet is just a great little tool. It's 4 lines per game. It tells you the straight-up record, ATS, and over-under, the average score, and the average lines. That's the one thing you can't find anywhere that I haven't found. You can look that, you know, Boston's average line at home was 0.3. Their average total was 2.8. On the road, they're 6-1 on the road, 6-1 ATS, 1-6 over-under. But then also for each home and away team, I give you what they've done the last 2 weeks. So you can see what teams have done on the road, on the home, the last 2 weeks with average lines. It really helps to see, you know, if you have a team that's 1-3 against the spread but 4-0 and the average line is double digits, and now they're playing an opponent where it's a single-digit line or perhaps they're a favorite. You know, you can see the transitions in the schedule. So it's up daily at wagertalk.com. You go to news and then NBA, or you can always just go to my page at wagertalk.com, go to the Cal Sports Handicapper page. You'll get the Gridiron Guide weekly. You'll get the daily NBA stat sheet. And still working on the college basketball daily newsletter. That'll be something special. It's taking a little more effort and a little more work than we thought it would, but it'll be out by the 1st of December.
Well, you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, wagertalk.com. Always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk to you again next week.
To all your listeners, have a happy Thanksgiving next Thursday and safe travels for anyone that's going out on the road.
Good stuff there on today's show from Rolf Michaels of wagertalk.com. Like I told you about yesterday, we'll see what we can figure out for next Thursday's show. We'll see if we can pre-record something with Brad or Rolf or tie something together here for the last couple episodes of the week. Obviously, we'll do our Super Contest segment in some way, shape, or form. I don't know if we can get Brent from DSI Sportsbook because his off day is Wednesday. He works Thursday. I don't know if I'm going to be able to record on Thursday or not, but we'll try to figure out everything that we can there with the holiday. They'll do it for me. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment, Wes Reynolds will pinch hit for Sports Cheetah, and I should have my five-play card because I think I'm going to play the Thursday night game here this week. But then also Brent from DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.